From how to fund Idaho public schools to how we govern higher education in our state and to more and more growth. Those were just some of the topics that made headlines around Idaho this week, which means it is time for our Friday Reporter Roundtable. Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, Bill Manny with Idaho Statesman, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press join me live in studio to break it all down. Well, happy Friday.
Yes.
Hello.
Thank you for coming in. And Kevin, I want to start with you just right off the bat about the funding formula, but also the closed process.
Yes. Yeah, so this is a very important process, and it's a somewhat open but also somewhat closed process. You have a legislative committee that's been working for 3 years to try to figure out how to rewrite Idaho's school funding formula. And this is the calculation that the state uses to carve up almost $2 billion that goes to the K-12 system. We haven't rewritten the system in 25 years because it's very complicated. It's very controversial. It's a very sensitive topic for a lot of school administrators who are worried that they may lose money in the new calculation. But you have legislators saying, look, the school system has changed so much in 25 years. We didn't have charter schools 25 years ago. We didn't have virtual learning. We didn't have all sorts of things that we have now. So we need to rewrite it. So the committee is going around the state having public hearings, hearing from teachers and hearing from administrators in an open forum. But their consultants are also having closed focus group meetings with educators and superintendents and business managers to get into the nuts and bolts of the formula, what works, what doesn't work. Those are closed not only to the media and the public, but State Department of Education and State Superintendent Shari Ibarra, she's not invited and her staff isn't invited. Even the legislators who are going to eventually have to vote on changes in this formula, they're not even there. It's an extremely closed process. The Idaho Press Club has raised concerns about this, that you've got a conversation going on and people don't understand who's saying what and in what context. It's a concern.
And why would they, what would be the goal of having it that closed?
The idea is kind of twofold. They wanted to hear from educators and administrators who are on the ground working with this formula, who know it most intimately. I get that part of it. I get the idea
and
of
maybe
having
open
a round table with folks who deal with this formula on a daily basis and really understand the nuts and bolts of it. The idea of the closed meeting is to allow a teacher wants to say something about the formula and the concern is that teacher is going to worry that this is going to get back to his or her superintendent. It's going to be seen as a reflection on the district. I'm not convinced about that. And I understand the idea of a focus group, I don't understand the idea of a closed one.
Bill?
Well, the Kevin's team's reporting, you know, talks about these consultants who are controlling the process and even sounded surprised that the Idaho legislature would want them to draft the final recommendations in public session, which seemed like a pretty remarkable and almost naive position to be taking. And I'm wondering if we know if this is a consultant group that's had success in keeping it this quiet, this private in other states.
They have told us that they've had similar focus group meetings in other states and that this is the first time there's been objection to it, which also strikes me.
That's strange, yeah.
Right. And the funding does need to shift. I mean, we are talking about 25 years with it being the same. And our public school system is exploding, especially when you look at West Ada. So something needs to change. I think everyone would agree with that.
Right. Something has to be updated. But this process really matters because eventually the legislature is going to have to buy off on this process and the product. And that product is going to be very heavily vetted and scrutinized and dissected. And you're going to have legislators who have to vote on things that are A, very complicated, and B, very sensitive, that may or may not immediately help their school districts in their communities. I mean, if you're a legislator and you've got a superintendent saying, we're worried that this is going to cost us money down the road, that's a tough vote.
And then, Bill, I want to talk about the other end and higher education and what's going on with the governance process with that. We've heard about a possible CEO. We have all these presidents leaving. things are shifting.
So, you know, Dr. Kustra had a, I think what several people described as a farewell address, which has a very Washingtonian sensibility to it this week, and talked about a variety of things, including kind of a call for changing the way the state board and education is overseen. And I think that it really resonates right now, given how much turmoil we've seen in this in the search process and the back and forth over candidates for the Idaho universities. And I know Kevin's done a lot of reporting on this notion of trying to get 60% of our students onto some kind of advanced degree post-high school. And the state board has had this as a goal for, it seems like, a generation now and made no progress on it. So my sense is that there is a hunger for at least looking at how we oversee education in Idaho. Now, I don't know if Dr. Kustra's prescription is the right one. I don't know enough and don't have enough details, but it seems to me that we are due for a deep look at that. There is money in the state now to do a study. It's not going to be the CEO proposal that Governor Otter floated, but the study really is aimed at trying to find savings in the system, and I think maybe we need to be thinking about a study that's a little broader. I don't know if that can happen, but that's my sense of where we are right now.
Kevin? It's interesting. I mean, there's kind of, on the surface at least, there's kind of a tension between what Dr. Kustra talked about this week and what is being talked about in terms of consolidating services. I mean, the idea of consolidating services and trying to save money, I mean, that's the crux of this proposal for a CEO or whatever it turns out to be. We have redundant administrative functions on the university campuses. Let's combine that. Let's save some money. Let's move that money into scholarships or something else that really helps students. So that's a centralization. What Kustra is talking about is let's have a governing body at the local level that sets budgets for the university, hires or fires a university president, decides maybe on tuition and fees. So that becomes a decentralized process. Now, I think you could do both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But that's a lot of change and a lot of, potential tension between the two.
That's a lot of power shift.
Yeah, it is a lot of power shift and shift away from the state board.
Right.
Kustra's saying, look, state board's got way too much on its plate. We got to move some of this away from them.
Because people may not realize that the SBOE, the State Board of Education, governs from K to career. So it's a lot of people think it's K through 12. They also govern what goes on at the higher ed level.
Well, and as Dr. Kustra noted, they also oversee Idaho Public Television. So, I mean, they have a wide portfolio and things just like the funding formula for schools have changed over the last 20 years, so have the demands on higher education.
I'm speaking with Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Kevin Richard with the Idaho Ed News, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press Tribune, part of our Friday reporter roundup. Want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the hullabaloo with Senator Jim Risch and the Manafort lobbyist. Bill, you want to take that one?
So it's a crazy story, and I am no expert either on Paul Manafort or Ukraine or on Russian meddling in the United States. But what has happened is that these investigations have revealed that apparently a front group for a pro-Russian Ukrainian organization hired some very well-known American lobbyists, including Vin Weber, a well-known and well-respected former member of Congress, who met with Senator Risch and also did other outreach with other members of Congress. What turns out now, that money came from a questionable source, and so now, kind of two steps removed, people are saying Jim Risch took money from the Russians, and there's a lawyer in Massachusetts now who is saying that he took illegal contributions and knew about it and should have known better. And it just strikes me as a casual observer of this story that Senator Risch is at least as much victim as he is recipient of this misrepresentation. And he received a $1,000 donation in 2013. Among more than $1 million he got that year, and I am not always quick to defend Senator Risch, but in this case, it strikes me that is a far reach to accuse him of knowingly accepting money from Russia-backed sources for his campaign.
And I'm sure this is not the last we will hear about this because of the cold climate and culture that we're in right now.
Absolutely, you are likely to hear more about this, and
And Rich hasn't said anything.
Rich has not
said
much, and I think in this case, you know, I think he's done himself a disservice, right? This is one of those times when Senator Risch should make time from his busy schedule and come talk about what's going on, because I think he's probably got a pretty good case to make.
Well, and I agree with you, Bill, that there are times where it makes sense to come out and say something, because if you don't, not saying something can sometimes not look good.
Right. This is really a metaphor for how big and complicated our system is and our campaign finance system is, and it's messy. But it also seems unlikely that he can't remember a meeting with the likes of Vin Weber, a prominent and well-known lobbyist. So it would just be good to know more.
Well, maybe we'll find that out, won't we? We are back with our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guests today include Bill Manny with Idaho Statesman, Scott McIntosh with Idaho Press, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News. We're going to be focusing this segment on growth and all aspects of growth. It is a daily conversation, not just in the Treasure Valley, but in the Magic Valley up north as well. Scott, I want to talk with you first specifically about Canyon County, because it seems sometimes we tend to focus on Boise being the fastest growing city in the country, but we're seeing pretty tremendous growth in Canyon County as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of quiet. There are these subdivisions that get approved almost on a weekly basis or monthly basis, and we're talking 200, 300, 400 houses. Just on Tuesday, the NAMPA Planning and Zoning Commission approved a 385-house subdivision in North Nampa on 100 acres. And that's, you know, that's just the flavor of the month. And Caldwell, the city of Caldwell, is booming as well. And their downtown development is speeding right along. A new 11-screen movie theater is opening up in downtown Caldwell, and that's going to be in conjunction with the Indian Creek Plaza that's opening up next month. So things are really happening in Canyon County as well.
And this theater has made some headlines because of how fancy it is. I mean, well, we've got leather seats.
Leather reclining seats. They're touting it as a luxury theater. This is going to be first-run movies, 11 screens in downtown Caldwell. I think it's going to be a real kickstart for downtown Nampa. I think a lot of people are going to be coming down to downtown Nampa. You know, they go to the movies, then they waltz around downtown and go to a coffee shop or an ice cream shop or have dinner before the movie. So, you know, things are really happening in downtown Caldwell.
And how does this compare? So when you have this big movie theater opening in Caldwell and you've got the Indian River Plaza, Indian Creek Plaza, how does that play into Nampa? Because you have to go through Nampa to get to Caldwell, but there's this real downtown growth happening in Caldwell versus Nampa.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who in Nampa who are saying, "Hey, guys, let's look at what Caldwell's doing and see if we can get our act together." You know, downtown Nampa is no slouch. I mean, there are things happening in downtown Nampa as well, and I think Mayor Debbie Kling is really making efforts to improve that. There are some plans, certainly not as dramatic as Indian Creek Plaza, but I think things are happening in downtown Nampa as well. But I think people would like to see a little more activity in downtown Nampa like they're seeing in downtown Caldwell.
And then we come back to Boise, and it's potentially more high-rises. And there's been a lot going on with a particular city council person, Scott Ludwig. And he's on council. He's an attorney, also wanting to develop a very large building, some would say. And there's been some real pushback.
With a skybridge connecting, yes.
So, Bill, talk about this, because that skybridge in particular has gotten some big pushback.
Well, I think it's an 11-story building and a 9-story building down in the Central Edition. Kind of the old part of town. And so people who don't like it feel like it's out of character for that area. And it's also raising a question of what is the appropriate role for a city councilman as a developer, you know. And even though he's taken the steps to step away from the council and not be involved in the process, you can't separate that water, what's in the pond, right? And so I think, you know, people rightly have questions about the appropriate role of a city councilman. And nobody's questioning whether he's done anything illegal. It's just – it's optics. It doesn't look good. And I think that's it's an issue that he's going to have to be aware of, and so is the council. The other, you know, as I was listening to Scott talk about what's happening in Nampa and Caldwell, I was remembering a conversation that Kevin and I were involved with. We're both on the City Club of Boise Program Committee, and we had this very discussion about growth right now. And it wasn't just downtown, or it wasn't just the you know, southeast. It was everywhere. I live in Northwest Boise, and what's happening at Glenwood and State affects all of us. There's a big open space near Kevin that's gone up for sale, and so I think what's different now is it's not just happening in one neighborhood or one downtown. It's happening everywhere, and so everybody is anxious, and everybody is angsting over whether the Boise, the Treasure Valley that they know and they love, is going to survive, is going to still be the same kind of place that brought us here.
And then when you talk about that growth, because you're completely right, Bill, you can't go down a street without seeing some for sale sign if it's an empty lot. Or if you see an empty lot, you know it's not going to be empty for long. And that doesn't matter if you're in Boise or Caldwell.
Right.
And then we get back to, with growth, how do we deal with transportation?
And transportation and schools, as Kevin's pointing out, two of the biggest issues involving growth and affecting everybody in a way that it may have felt distant. Now we're having to sit in traffic, whether it's on State Street or Chinden or Fairview or Eagle Road. Your children are facing the bigger schools or underfunded schools. So it's gone to a place where it's very tactile. It's, you know, it's something that everybody is sensing.
And we had Compass come in yesterday, a representative from Compass and Valley Transit. And, you know, they were talking about, you know, how do we fix this and all of that. But Scott, I wanted to get to you. You had a point to make.
Yeah, you know, with projections of over a million people in the Treasure Valley, I think transportation and education are the two areas that are going to be the biggest problems that we face. And they're the two problems that we really don't have any long-term solutions for. And, you know, I know Kevin can talk more about the education side of it, but the transportation part of it, there's no funding for public transportation. We talk about the costs of public transportation, but, you know, are we really looking at the costs of not doing public transportation? We can't just expand I-84 into 10 lanes and call it good. You know, forget about State Street, which, you know, is already at a deficient rating right now. So with another 500,000 people moving into the valley, it's just unsustainable, and there's no real long-term plan to fix it.
And that's what Compass was saying yesterday when they came in, was it may be time to look at private entities, bringing private businesses in, you know, to get – that's what they brought a representative from Salt Lake City's Urban Transit Authority, and he said in Salt Lake that's what they ended up having to do. Same situation. Don't have government funding or not enough. So having private business come on. But then on the flip side of that, ACHD, the Ada County Highway District, is doing a survey. And one of the questions is, do you want to give money to ACHD? And that's not even in the top three priorities. So,
you know, the consultant or the guy who came in from Utah and was speaking about the light rail success there, I think you can't have a conversation about transit that doesn't end up talking about light rail. And it sounds like such a great idea, but that's such a big leap from where we are now, from barely able to figure out how to run buses, that I think as much as everybody likes the idea, it just seems like it's such a bridge too far. And we're going to have to figure out how to take some baby steps, because we have this conversation in the Valley that doesn't connect for most people. It feels like a disconnect. And I think our leaders have to figure out how to have that conversation in a smarter way before people are going to buy in.
And with this survey with ACHD, one of the things that they pointed out was your priorities are different depending upon where you live.
Absolutely.
They said what the survey showed, if you're in West Ada, in Canyon County, you want less commuter congestion because you are the ones tending to commute. Now, then you look at East Boise, living, you know, close to downtown. You want bicycle lanes, but you want safer routes to school. So, Kevin, what about that? Because Scott was so right when he said, when we look at growth, I think sometimes schools and education, people don't see the connection. Mm-hmm. And there is a connection.
There's a connection, and it's a connection in a lot of ways that maybe you wouldn't expect or you wouldn't intuitively arrive at as a conclusion. I had a chance to talk to the spokespeople for the three large districts in the Treasure Valley this week. What I was curious to hear from the Boise School District, mind you, I've got infill going on literally in my neighborhood. You have three projects going on and a lot right behind my house on the market right now. So I'm assuming, looking at this, that this is going to lead to an influx of kids coming into the school district. Boise is expecting enrollment to stay relatively flat. They don't think that this growth is going to be the kind of growth that brings families into Boise, especially families with young kids. Hmm. Now, West Ada, and mind you, West Ada passed a $95 million school bond issue just in March. They're expecting more growth. I mean, that seems to be unabated growth going on in West Ada. So the voters who approved a bond issue in March are probably going to be looking at a bond issue of some kind in the not-too-distant future, maybe a couple of years out. Nampa, it's a little bit different. The growth that they're seeing, it's a lot of retirees who are coming in with no kids. And you bet that changes the way a school district has to make the case for a bond issue or a supplemental levy. It's a whole different clientele. It's a whole different kind of a case about investing in schools where you're having to convince people who may not have a direct stake, who may not have kids in the schools. It's a very different a different equation entirely. So the idea when we talk about growth is not all created equal.
Well, and then we look at the idea of the safer routes to schools with growth, because I can't remember off the top of my head, but the school down off of like 27th and Main, when they are redoing that school, and they used to have all of when with the older school, kids could walk to school. Mm-hmm. They're not creating that again. And that, once again, causes more congestion. And I mean, why do we see things like that happening, Kevin? I know it's a big question.
I don't know, and I suspect part of what you're seeing around neighborhoods is trying to retrofit safe routes to schools or sidewalks or bike lanes into neighborhoods that are already established. I think it's a lot easier to work that kind of amenity into a new neighborhood and just say, look, we're going to have bike paths. We're going to have, you know, a safe route to school built into this subdivision. It's part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, city P&Z or city council may insist upon it. It's a lot harder to do in an older neighborhood. It just is.
Yeah, and I think CUNA and Nampa and Caldwell are doing a better job of that with the new neighborhoods. But really, the bottom line is that, you know, the way we fund new buildings for schools just is not growth paying for itself. It's really, you know, folks who are already living here are paying for the new schools brought on by the growth, and that's just not sustainable either.
Well, and you can't continue to ask people to pay for bonds, not over and over and over again.
Yeah, but we've been saying that. We've been saying that for 20 years now,
right,
for West Ada, and it keeps happening.
And that's where the growth is.
The state has been paying for, yep, school buildings for over a century, and I don't see that changing overnight at the State House.
I want to thank my guest today for talking about this. Ooh, growth. We're gonna keep talking about it. My guest today is Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. Thank you again.